There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
No! Oh, my God! How could he do that?
Are you on
donate?
What?
Charles Darwin.
The nerds is where it's at.
Welcome everybody back into Nerd Sesh. As always, I'm Carson Brabber, and alongside me is Logan Camden. And today, we have a very fun NBA episode coming up for you all. Our first NBA show in a couple weeks, which really is mind-blowing because we're normally talking basketball a couple times a week here. But the theme of the day is going to be our NBA midseason awards. We are going to start, though, by talking about the news of the day, and that is that Cam Reddish, local Nerd Sesh favorite, really Carson Brabber favorite especially, has been traded to the New York Knicks. The Knicks will acquire Cam Solomon Hill, a Nerd Sesh least favorite, and a 2025 second rounder in exchange for Kevin Knox and a protected Charlotte first round pick. This year it's top 18 protected. Next year would be top 16, 2024 and 25, lottery, and then it would turn into a second rounder if it got all the way there. So, Logan, quickly before we get into all of our award races, what were your thoughts when you saw this news?
I mean, I thought a lot of people on Twitter did a good job of summing it up, and the Hawks got absolutely fleeced. I mean, this is a guy with, I mean, I don't want to say superstar upside, but he's got a lot of star traits, a lot of really things that you like in a guy his size. He's an intriguing defensive asset, as Carson talks about every single time we bring up Cam Reddish. He's a 6'8 dude who can handle the rock in isolation, out of the pick and roll. And he's got a propensity to just explode scoring-wise and get hot, man. Like, if Cam, like, this is going to sound kind of vague, but, like, Cam is literally just a guy who can, if he sees the ball go through the hoop a few times early in the game, man, he can explode for a 20-point performance, a 30-point performance. Like, he's Cam's an explosive bucket, man. I also like him getting paired up with R.J. Barrett back in town. Maybe bringing Zion in pretty soon. Just a Duke reunion up in New York. So, for the Hawks, this is all about the first-round pick. And I don't hate it for Atlanta. Like, I do think they got fleeced. I want to reiterate that. I think they got hosed. I don't think they got accurate value back for Cam. That being said, too many cooks in the kitchen. Too many good players on this team, in my opinion. You know, there's just not enough minutes to go around in this rotation. They had to make a move. I don't know why they chose Cam to be the guy that they gave the boot, because I think he's a special talent. But they just needed to move some guys around, and I think we might see the Hawks make a few more moves before the deadline to just free up some minutes down the stretch here for the rest of the season. As this pertains for Cam in the Knicks, I love it because all of the young assets that you have for the future, Carson, these are all guys under 23 years old here in New York. R.J. Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, Cam Reddish, Mitchell Robinson, Obi Toppin, Quentin Grimes, Deuce McBride, Jericho Sims, a ton of young talent that both of us really like here in New York for the future. So, I mean, again, you're getting younger, you're getting another talented guy in the mix. But something that I think is really interesting with Cam going to New York and being freed up from Trae Young, Cam's a guy who needs the ball in his hands to be really successful, right? That's where he works at his best, when he has the rock in his hands and can go serve his own buckets. In four games without Trae Young this year, Cam Reddish averaged 20 points per game. In 28 games with Trae Young, he averaged 11 points per game. I'm not saying that, you know, Cam's going to go out here and average 20 if he was the focal point of an offense, but it's a telling stat. When Cam is allowed to work and serve buckets in isolation, he can go out and do it for you. So, I mean, and I also think it speaks volumes about Trae Young's play style and how he needs to involve other guys in the offense, but I like it because you're freeing up Cam to go and do his own thing, and it's something that we just want to see him spread his wings and fly, and I really think that the Knicks already kind of have a deep rotation, but I think Cam's going to get a lot of burn off the bat, and we're going to see him do some special things. Again, I don't think we're going to see drastical statistical improvement. I think somewhere in the 10 to 15 range is expected for him because, again, the Knicks already have a lot of talent down this roster, but he's going to get a lot more burn and a lot more time to have the rock in his hands. So I love it, and I love it for the Knicks too. Again, you don't give up a whole lot of value. That's not a very good pick. This is an A trade for the Knicks, a C-plus trade for the Hawks, but I love it for Cam. I love it for New York. They got a guy with superstar upside with a lot of good traits.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot about Cam Reddish's game that is kind of seductive, frankly. I mean, when he is playing his best, listen, I really do think that he sucks you in and you think, oh my God, this guy is going to be remarkable. Cam Reddish is that kind of basketball player, okay? When everything is clicking, you look at that 6'8 guy who can handle the ball and has this beautiful smooth shot, and it's just like, oh my God, this is pretty remarkable. And we've seen those glimpses where when he was able to run the show a bit more, yeah, he can put up 30. The only reason I would hesitate to say that the Hawks got fleeced here, I do think that they're probably coming out on the wrong side of this trade, is that still in year three, we haven't seen Cam really consistently play up to expectations. Like, I still think that his overall scoring game needs to develop further. Yes, the pull-up jump shooting is impressive, but that's really all that there is. 38% from deep, though, I think makes him valuable anywhere, especially when you consider the defense. The playmaking is flawed. Like, there are a lot of things about Cam that I think you need to acknowledge. And in a Knicks rotation that has a lot of depth, I mean, I think he's clearly a quality addition, but I don't know if he's a game-changing player, and I don't really know how his development looks from here on out, just because it has been such a mixed bag through 3 years. I wouldn't discount him getting a lot better. I also wouldn't put $1,000 on it. Like, I really don't know what to expect from Cam game to game, year to year. But I think that this is a win for the Knicks overall. You added a talented, quality guy, and you're giving up an asset that really isn't all that valuable. I mean, obviously, we're looking at another strong draft this year. I haven't had a ton of look at beyond the top guys, so I can't really speak to the depth. But if that pick goes beyond this year, which it very well may, or if you get the 18th pick in the draft this year, is that guy likely to be better than Cam Reddish? I would say probably not. But I also think, obviously, things have not gone as expected in Atlanta. Cam has been a guy who, you know, hasn't always been the most reliable, and he's a guy who I think they know is an appealing asset. So I definitely feel like the jury is still out on this trade, because year one, Cam, it was a major adjustment. Like, he looked so out of place for so much of the year, and then he finished the year in really strong form. And then year two, you know, he was injured pretty early into the year, only played 26 games, and then had a couple great moments in the playoffs, but also the Hawks achieved their great success without him even out there. And now year three, I think, has been the best we've seen him, but there's still been some inconsistency. So I think we'll see. Right now, I like this for the Knicks, for all the reasons you laid out. And I still like Cam Reddish, but also I have to be realistic about Cam Reddish and can't just get sucked in by all the seductively great moments.
This game is seductive. Great, great phrase. I do think, one more thing about this, though. I do think Cam fits that defensive identity in New York. That's something that I really like, though. You know, he's a guy who's going to work on both ends. He's going to give a lot of effort. You do make a good point, though. To maximize a guy like Cam, he needs to have the ball in his hands a lot, and I think you make a really good point. I would like for him to go to a younger team where maybe he could, you know, be inefficient for a little bit. You know, go out and serve his own buckets. Like, I think Cam could be a really good player given the opportunities, but I don't know. I think there's a better system. Obviously, the ball is spread out a little more than in Atlanta, where it's just Trae Young every single possession. It's a better situation, but I'm excited for it. And again, I think this is a, I don't know if this is going to really impact the Knicks for this season, but it's a better spot than he was in. And again, look, man, all this talk about Zion wanting out, doesn't this push it a little forward? Like, I really do think that, I don't know, man, reuniting with two of your college buddies, I think it definitely puts it on the table for the future that Zion can come to the Knicks.
Yeah, it's tough for me to speak to that element because I don't know about the intricacies of all their relationships. I would say that it probably can't hurt, though. I mean, unless he, you know, dislikes those guys, which I don't think anybody has that impression. So we'll see, man. It's very possible that Zion moves at some point and the Knicks are, I guess, making a move that would make them more appealing in that conversation here. But there's still a long way to go, I think, given their performance this year, for the Knicks to be seen as the kind of high-profile destination that I think they hope to be coming into this year and that I thought they could be. And early in the year, I feel like everybody thought that they could have been. But now they're 500, and they've got a couple big contracts that they need to grapple with Julius Randle and Fournier, and we'll see how they progress from here. I agree with you. I mean, I don't think this is significantly changing things for the Knicks because, again, depth has not been the issue. I mean, I'll take adding a quality 3 and D wing whenever, but an inconsistent guy on a team where the issues aren't coming from the bench, I don't know if it's necessarily game-changing, like you said. All right, so with that, let's move into the awards here because I think we've got some really interesting races. And to me, the most interesting is also the biggest one, and that is MVP. I think that throughout this year, we've seen multiple people assert themselves as the favorite at multiple points. I think there's multiple really strong arguments to be made for some different guys as we stand currently. So I'll throw it over to you. Who do you have as your MVP right now?
So I'm giving it to the odds on leader for the award right now, Steph Curry. And Warriors have the best net rating in basketball, the second best record in basketball. The thing that makes the Steph case so interesting right now, an article done by Zach Cram of The Ringer earlier this morning, I thought he did a great job of breaking down Steph's MVP case. I got a lot of numbers from it. And he made a really good point. This is maybe Steph's worst offensive season of the last decade. Not hyperbolic. Exiting out 2020, obviously, five games, horrible stretch. We're not counting that. But of the last decade, like, this could be the worst, his worst offensive season ever. He's shooting his lowest effective field goal percentage from mid-range since 2010. He's shooting his lowest effective three-point percentage since 2010. Over his last 15 games, he's only shooting 35% from deep. And still, he has the second-best on-off differential in all of the NBA, only to Nikola Jokic at plus 21.9 points per 100 possessions. And while he struggled to shoot the ball, he has improved dramatically defensively, and I think that's why we've seen the differential not matter as much despite his offensive struggles solely by him. But Steph's gravity is what I'm going to go with here and why I'm sticking with him as MVP. A big part of this article, Steph just being on the floor makes his teammates better, gets them open looks, improves their shot quality. Literally every single player on the Dubs roster has a higher and better shot quality with Steph on the floor than without. Kind of simplistic, you should expect that, but it's crazy, man. Wiggins' shot quality goes up by 6% with Curry on the floor. Draymond's shot quality goes up by 7% on the floor. Damian Lee's goes up by 6.5%. JTA's goes up by nearly 9%. And I mean, you see it when you watch the Warriors play. Like, teams are playing Steph differently. They are trying to trap him. They are trying to double-team him. They are throwing so much attention at him. That's why I think the Klay addition might make his MVP case stronger as the season goes along, because it's going to relieve some of the stress on him, relieve some of the weight off of him, and just open up some spacing on the floor for him to operate, and maybe we'll see these shooting numbers get better. But, I mean, his gravity alone has made this Warriors offense great. And I think if this continues down the rest of the way, Carson, I don't think Steph can be my MVP pick. Like, if he continues struggling shooting the pill like this, I don't think Steph's going to be MVP. I think there's just going to be too many holes for people to poke in his MVP case, individually, statistically wise. And there's some other really good candidates here. I don't have a problem with anybody giving the award to Nikola Jokic or Kevin Durant. You can make really compelling arguments for both of them. Like, Jokic is stupid. Like, Jokic's numbers are stupid. KD's numbers are stupid, too. And he's got a massive burden on him every single night because of James Harden's struggles, because of Kyrie maybe not being out there. He also has a massive burden on him defensively because of the situation at the five spot. They're running KD at the five in crunch time. He's like their de facto rim protector sometimes. So, like, I think you could give it to any three of these guys right now. But as it stands right now, I think Steph has had the greatest impact for his team. And again, record-wise, I still think maybe you don't care as much at this point in the season. Record-wise, I still think it does matter that the Dubs have the second-best record in the NBA, and I'm going to tend to reward that.
It certainly matters. You know, we have a legitimate sample size at this point. And Steph is so great and so impactful that if he were playing his best basketball, he would be the runaway, I would say basically undeniable MVP. Because even when he is having a career worst performance from deep by percentage and his lowest 2-point percentage since he became an all-star and has had a completely uncharacteristic amount of total off nights and is scoring like, what is it, almost 5 less per game than he did last year, he's still right here. He is still clearly the driving factor on a team that I would say is the title favorite and has not had a consistent star-level offensive player alongside him this year, scorer at the very least. I know Andrew Wiggins is currently going to be an all-star starter. As a Golden State Warriors fan, I am not a fan of that because I believe in the integrity of the all-star game, and that's not an accurate representation of who the best players in basketball have been this year. I mean, he's not even close to as good as a guy in the front court of his own team who isn't going to be selected as an all-star starter in Draymond Green. So, whatever. I digress. Steph is that great that he still, again, will be the engine of a 30-10 team, and his on-off splits are unreal. And he's still efficient in the scheme of things. I mean, 59% true shooting just because, you know, he takes such high-volume threes, and he's going to make still, in the scheme of things, a really high percentage of them. He just is an offensive machine like we've never seen before. However, all that being said, I think that gives him a case, but I think that individual performance-wise, he just doesn't compare to a couple of the other top candidates. Like, he has not been playing close to his best basketball. And if he gets up to that level, again, I do think that his impact on team success, he is playing the best defense of his life, and his team has been unbelievable, he'd be the runaway candidate. And I think that by the end of the year, because I do think he'll start playing better, he probably will be the winner. Right now, though, I cannot give it to him. And in fact, I think I would have him third. This was really close for me. And I think that there are honestly 5 really strong MVP candidates at this point. Not guys you could make a case for as number one, although there may be 4 of those, but 5 really strong candidates. I have Nikola Jokic as my MVP right now. And obviously, I aggressively campaigned for him throughout last year. I thought he had one of the great seasons of all time, the best of any offensive big man ever. And then he went and he's playing better this year. And he's putting up 26-14-7 on almost 64% true shooting, putting up some of the most unbelievable on-off splits I've ever seen. His team is 21.6 points per 100 possessions better when he is on the floor. It's absolutely historic. He's also playing career-best defense. He's actually holding people a couple percentage points below their average field goal percentage when he's the primary defender this year and has been really important to a Denver defense that has been quite good this year. And I just think he's been the best player in basketball. Like, I don't think you can deny that blend of efficiency and raw production and versatility offensively and competing defensively. And the team results really do justify that. Like, I understand that they're the 6th seed right now and they're 20-19 overall. But I already gave you the on-off splits. His team's 19-15 when he plays. They're 1-4 when he doesn't. I don't know how you could hold games that he didn't play in against him. The Nuggets outscore opponents by 8.6 points per 100 possessions when he is on the floor. That is the mark of an elite team. So I don't know how you can hold it against him that when he's off the floor, they're getting outscored by 13 points per 100. Like, obviously, that just speaks even more so to his greatness. Their second leading scorer is Will Barton. Their bench just has not been good this year. So to me, it came down to KD or Jokic because, again, I think their individual performance has been more impressive than Steph's. And I think that the mainstream thought would be, oh, well, KD's team is the 2 seed, so you reward him. But if Jokic's team has been 4 points per 100 possessions better when he is on the floor, you're making an irrational argument. It does not make sense to reward somebody for what happens when they are not on the court. And so I just think this is where we kind of have to evolve as an NBA community and understand that we just have better information than we ever have before. And so if we have data that says, hey, Jokic's team when he plays is better than KD's team when he plays, why does it matter that KD's team has a better record? It shouldn't, because that is a product of, I don't know, KD having a better team around him, James Harden, and the likes, whereas Jokic, again, has Will Barton as his second best player. Like, the Nuggets are a great team when he's on the floor. They're a 75th percentile offense. They're an 88th percentile defense, and his on-off splits are 97th and 99th percentile. Like, the dude has just achieved offensively basketball perfection, and he's gotten certainly good enough defensively to where I think you can actually say that he is having a positive impact there this year in regular season terms. Maybe he gets exposed in the postseason, whatever, but the effort has been consistent and the team results have been there. So it's really close, dude. Like, KD has a massive burden on him as well. He's putting up 37.5 and 6 on almost 63% true shooting. His defense has been really good. I mean, he's holding people 4% below their average and has been consistently committed there. But I just think if Jokic's team is better when he's on the floor, and I think Jokic has an even greater burden and is even more efficient and is impacting the game in even more ways offensively, how do I not choose him? Like, I am a guy who values historical precedence, but if the Nuggets are an elite team when Jokic is on the floor, can we hold it against him that they don't have an elite record because everything collapses when he isn't out there? I don't think so. I think it's just more of a testament to his greatness. So that's where I come down on it. I think it's really tough. I think anybody who wants to make a different argument is justified. Unless it's LeBron, then I don't think you're justified. But I'm going with Jokic.
I completely agree. I think it's a really good case. And again, that's with mentioning the myriad of injuries that he's had to deal with. Again, you talk about KD's burden on him with Harden's inconsistencies, with everything they've dealt with. You're without MPJ. You're without Jamal Murray. You've had Barton, Green, Marcus Howard. Like, even their bench has been dealing with guys being out. Like, Jokic has got the biggest burden on him in basketball. And Carson, I think you'll agree with me. I want to give one more stat out. You throw out the offensive points per possession. Yeah, they have the second best offense in basketball when he's on the floor and the third worst one in basketball when he's off. Let me ask you this. Do you think Nikola Jokic is like the most disrespected NBA superstar ever? Like, I mean, I thought Mike Malone did a really good job in the presser the other day. Jokic doesn't play a sexy brand of basketball. It's not going to jump off the page at you. In fact, when Jokic jumps, I don't know if you could slide a piece of paper under there. You know, he doesn't have a whole lot of bounce. Jokic doesn't play a sexy brand of basketball, but I mean, I just don't get how a guy can dominate each and every night like this and consistently get disrespected in these circles. Like, I will read articles and it's Steph, KD, Giannis. Jokic isn't even mentioned. I think Nikola Jokic is one of the most disrespected NBA superstars of all time. What do you think? He might be the most.
Well, he's firmly in the conversation, and it really is kind of mind-boggling to me. I've been saying for more than a year that I think he's the best player on the planet, and I actually do love watching him play. I mean, maybe I have different criteria than most people, but like brilliant touch, brilliant passing, you know, those things get me very excited when I'm watching a basketball game. I understand, though, that maybe he doesn't have that same appeal to the masses, and he plays in Denver, and again, his team isn't winning at an elite clip because he has a really poor supporting cast alongside him without the two star level guys who should be out there. So I don't know when he's going to get the credit he deserves. I've made a million rants about this guy, and I don't want it to come across as like favoritism or that I have like a pro Jokic agenda, because I didn't come into this with my mind made up, and I really wasn't sure if I could justify Jokic's MVP, but I think it is the most rational case. And like, you look at other elements of Steph's case, for example. Yes, the impact on team success is dramatic. They also, though, are where they are because they have the best defense in basketball. Like, that is just a fact of the matter. Yes, he totally elevates their offense. They are an unbelievable defensive team, comfortably the best in the league there. And Steph has contributed on that end. But obviously, these MVP candidates, their contributions are much more about what they provide offensively. And that's where Steph's value is. And they're a really good offense, but that's like not the primary reason they are a great team. So I think Jokic has the strongest case. I think he's the best player on the planet, and I absolutely think he's right up there for the most disrespected superstar, like, ever. I mean, certainly of our lifetimes, I can't think of anybody who has been this undeniably great and so neglected, ignored, and when he is in the conversation, disrespected. I see people talking about, like, oh, I don't ever want to see another Jokic MVP in my life. We still talk about last year like it was process of elimination, and you just have to look objectively at the circumstances, what he had to overcome, his team situation, his volume of production, his efficiency, his role within that offense. The greatness is undeniable, man. All it takes is watching and thinking for a second. So there you go. Any other shout-outs here? Because I do think that although I think KD has the second strongest case just because having this Nets team with everything that they've been through and some of the inconsistencies of Harden and how great he's been individually, them being 26-14 is really impressive. Steph has to be here. Giannis, it's just inevitable. I mean, when he walks into 28.5, 11.5, and 6 on like almost 62% true shooting, and his on-off splits are great, plus 14. The Bucks are 26-17 defensively. He's obviously playing at an all-defense level. You could make a Giannis case, and you know, I'd be slightly bored by it, and I don't think it would be the most compelling because he clearly has the best, I would say, supporting cast around him if you're looking at compared to who the Warriors have had up to this point on the year. I think the Bucks have had the best group. But Giannis is unbelievable. And then I do think LeBron deserves to be fifth here. Like, the production and efficiency is incredible. 29, 7.5, and 6.5 on 62.5% true shooting. The team around him is not very good. He's playing plus defense, but it's just, you know, the on-off splits aren't as impressive. They're just under plus 4. They're 16-14 when he plays, 5-7 without him. So it's like, what's the LeBron argument over a Jokic if I'm going to go with the guy producing at an unbelievable level for a team that isn't a top seed? I just don't think there is one other than he's LeBron James and people love LeBron James.
No, I mean, LeBron definitely has to be here in consideration at least. I mean, when they'd have to go on one hell of a run on the back half of the season for him to, you know, really cement himself. But there's a chance. There's one more guy I think that, you know, warrants attention, and that's probably Ja Morant, just what he's done this season. I'm not saying he's probably sixth out of six, but I mean, I get it. The pushback for the Ja Morant case is how good they were with him off the court, and I agree. That's probably what would poke some holes in his case, but like, and again, I don't think you can put him over a Jokic, over a Curry, over a KD, but I mean, I think he has to be in consideration. They're third out West right now. If they somehow, if Ja continues his play like this, if he continues shooting the pill like this, if he continues being this efficient, I think his assist numbers need to be a little better. He's like, what is he, like 24-6-6 right now? I think his numbers have to improve marginally. But if they somehow land that number two seed, I think Ja maybe should be in consideration. Like, he is having, he's having an outstanding season, man.
I think my number six candidate, and I do think there's a drop-off, but Joel Embiid has been unbelievable this year, and the Sixers are 20-9 when he plays, which you wouldn't think just because overall, I mean, the record has not been there for them this year because I think that they're, what, like 3-8 when he doesn't? So that's obviously a significant reflection there, and the raw production is there, 27, 10.5, and 4.5, and the efficiency is there, 60% true shooting, the defensive contributions, the on-off splits. So I would probably go Embiid. I might go DeMar DeRozan also above Ja. I just think Ja is spectacular. We'll talk about him later because I think that there's another award that, in my opinion, has his name on it right now. But I do think a lot of what the Grizzlies do is a product of great coaching and unbelievable depth and high-quality defense, and there's just a lot to like. Ja is clearly the best player. He's super important, but I think there are other guys who are playing at a little bit of a higher level individually right now.
Wouldn't you say that plays into Ja's case, though? The fact that we don't have to worry about, like, the Grizzlies are going to win a lot of games because there's depth. Now, I'm saying narrative-wise, people are going to attribute that team success to Ja instead of the team. I agree with you. I completely agree. The depth is what makes this Grizzlies team great, but I think people could falsely attribute all of this to Ja, in turn making his case a little bit better.
Well, making his case a little bit more popular. Yeah. I don't know if that makes it better. Oh, absolutely. I think that Ja is going to get too much MVP buzz this year. I think that he's a phenomenal talent. The Grizzlies, what they're doing right now is unbelievable. He is a major part of that again. But I think there are going to be tons of people who are arguing Ja for MVP over Jokic or viewing him higher in their personal rankings. You can laugh, man, but that is the level of NBA discourse often, and I would definitely disagree with that. So I think you also would be hard-pressed to make a case on like a top-tier level for a Sun as great as CP3 has been and Book is having a career shooting season from beyond the arc. It's just the contributions of that team is inseparable. It's so much about the overall strength of that group, and the Jazz, I would say the same thing like last year. So I feel that there's a really, really strong top five. Right now I'm going Jokic. I do think by the end of the year it will be Steph, because again, you know, if Steph can just get up close to what's normal for him efficiency-wise, every other element of the argument is in his favor completely, and I think he would be a very, very, very deserving MVP if he's able to put those pieces together. All right, let's go now to Rookie of the Year. Obviously, this was an extremely hyped-up draft class. I, for one, was very excited to see it all play out. Who do you have as your Rookie of the Year right now?
I'm giving it to your guy, Evan Mobley. People have said this on Twitter, man. Like, Evan Mobley's a basketball alien, bruh. That guy's freaky. He's putting up about 15, 3, and 8 right now on 50% from the field. He's just phenomenal, dude, at everything at this point in this game. Dynamic finishing around the rim. I don't know if I've ever seen a guy, Carson, this big that is this bouncy. Like, when against Miles Turner, against other really strong, stout guys in the paint, Mobley's arms are so long, he's so freakishly tall, and he just has this freaky bounce. Like, he can just get up and jam on anybody. Then you get to the defensive instincts, the physical intangibles, the bounce, the agility. He's made so many snatch blocks. He gets so vertical on blocks. Like, Mobley's a freak, and he's also stupid fluid. Like, big guys should not move like this. If he gets stronger, I don't know if you gave him a player comp. I think the KG one's a good one, bro. KG with, like, way more offensive upside with creation off the dribble and stuff like that. As for the crux of this season, as an argument, I think the key one should just be that he's the second or third best player on a team that is going to make the playoffs that not many people had in the playoff conversation. Not many people had – a lot of people didn't have him in play-in conversation – and he has been a massive part of that. He leads rookies in field goal percentage, in rebounds per game, in blocks per game. And since 2000, 12th most blocks per game by a rookie, 16th most rebounds per game by a rookie since 2000, and the 19th highest field goal percentage by a rookie since 2000. And again, that's with him playing the four. You know, he's not even running the five spot. Jared Allen is still holding it down for them. He's been phenomenal this season. Yeah, man, I think it's a no-brainer at this point. Cade's been great. Cade against the Jazz the other night was phenomenal. I think, like, you can make arguments for Cade, for Scotty, for Franz, but, like, it is not translated to the team's success the way it has with Mobley. I think he's going to run away with it this back half of the season. I'll let you take over, man. He's been your guy. He's been your basketball baby, man. You staked your claim in him, and it's really paid off. The kid's unreal.
Yeah, look, I don't feel the need to go into great depth here because I made a video about why he was the best prospect I'd ever seen, and we spent a good half probably of the first month of the season just talking about the Cavs and Evan Mobley because I was just basking in it, dude, because God, I mean, let's face it, he really is great, and I think that you made the case. Scotty Barnes, raw production-wise, still competes. Efficiency-wise, is in the same ballpark and, you know, has a lot of elements of a good argument that can be similar to Mobley's too. Like, he's also contributing to a team that is winning. He is doing it in multiple ways on both ends. The raw production is impressive. I just don't think he's quite as good as Mobley. And a major reason for that is I just think Mobley's defensive impact is just so far past what you could ever reasonably expect from a rookie. I mean, he's holding opposing players 5% below their typical percentage when he's the primary defender. Inside of 6 feet, it's 15% below. Like, that is elite pure rim protection while he also is playing the four, and we know his mobility on the perimeter. And he's just playing a pivotal role on a team on both ends that is top six in the East right now and has survived an injury to Colin Sexton, which I think, you know, if you watched a lot of Cavs basketball, you probably were aware wasn't really going to hurt their team success, but a big name nevertheless. And then obviously Ricky Rubio, I think, was more significant because he was playing phenomenally and they've just kept on winning, and Mobley's been a huge part of that. And there have been times this year where I've thought he's their best player, early in the year especially, and his production has been pretty consistent. So I'm all on Team Mobley. Scotty, you got to give credit. 15-8, 3.5 on 54% true shooting. Really significant. And I do think Franz Wagner has to be the third guy and has a lot of similar strengths to his argument. Like, Raw production, 15.5, 5-3. Efficiency, 54% true shooting. And he's playing plus defense. Like, he's doing a lot of winning things out there. The playmaking, the shooting, competing on both ends. The difference is his team just isn't nearly as good, obviously, and so the contributions aren't as significant, and I don't think he's quite as good. But that dude has come in and immediately just proven that he is a baller. And you look surprised. I mean, would you have Cade here?
I'd have him too. I would have Cade too. And this is also, if we are basing it off of what they've already done, which I guess should be the criteria here, I would probably go Scotty, Franz, Cade. I think Cade's going to firmly finish as the second guy here. I think he's going to run away with it as the second guy. I want to shout out Franz, man. We talk about Franz a lot. I don't want to stick too long on him, dude. And again, you talk about the team success. I think the Magic have lost 10 straight. Yeah, it's not going to translate to team success. And Franz had 10 assists the other night. You laugh when I say point Franz. Franz has got vision, dude. He's got vision. He's a decent pick and roll ball handler. Like, he's, Franz is such a good glue guy, man. He is going to be, he's an awesome player.
How often are you saying point Franz? Because I don't remember that.
Bro! My eyes just popped out of my head. Dude. What are you talking? You laughed at me. I distinctly remember, if we go back like 2 or 3 NBA episodes, I said point Franz, and you literally laughed at me. Yes, I get he's like under, what is he, under 3 assists a night? Whatever, man. He can pop off every once in a while.
Okay, first of all, everybody who has paid attention to Franz Wagner's game since he was a prospect has known that he was a good passer. I have never denied that. Point Franz, probably a little bit radical, but that's what you tend to do, Logan. You get excited, you go to the extreme. I don't remember this. Maybe I have some sort of retrograde amnesia, and I'm okay with that.
I'm saying it facetiously to an extent, you know? Like, I'm not saying that the Orlando Magic should de facto make Franz Wagner their point, but it's whatever. I'll let that one go over your head.
Yeah, he's a very good player and does a lot of things well. All right. Defensive player of the year, Logan, I think is a really tough race at this point, but I'm interested in your thoughts. Who do you have winning DPOY?
It's a very tight race between Draymond Green and Rudy Gobert, and these guys have both been the best defensive players in basketball for a minute now. I'm going to give it to Draymond. Like you said, best defense in the league. I think it has to be rewarded. I don't know. I don't want to say Draymond's job is tougher, but I do think, I don't know if I can say that, but like, Draymond is just such a special player. Like, he's, this is more for the demographic of like 30 to 50 year olds. Like my dad, going to get this reference here. He's like Destiny in the X-Men comics. And what I mean by that, dude, Draymond sees the future on defense. He is so good at making anticipatory reads better than anybody in the NBA. Like, he sees things happen before they happen on the floor. It's amazing. Draymond is, he's so versatile. He's so switchable. He's so smart. Like, Draymond is just one of the smartest defensive basketball players of all time. The crux of this argument, I mean, I just think Warriors have the best defense in the league, and I think that needs to be rewarded. But Rudy has got a very interesting case as well. They're 14th in defensive rating right now, but he missed 3 games, and they dropped from 5th to 12th. Now, these margins are very slim. These are all, you know, decided by like a point or two in defensive rating, but it speaks volumes. They are 27-10 with Gobert. They allow 106 points per game when he's on the floor. They are 1-4 without him, and they allow 119 points per game. They're 2nd in defensive rating with him on the floor, and they're 24th with him off the floor. I mean, it is night and day with the Jazz when Rudy Gobert is out there. Like, any game where Rudy Gobert is not out there for the Jazz, I would not expect the Utah Jazz to win. Like, he's that impactful. That being said, though, I'm going to reward the best defensive player on the best defense in basketball, and that's Draymond Green. And I think that's where it starts and stops. But I was going to say I'm not going to be upset if you give it to Gobert. I am going to be a little upset. I think Draymond deserves it. But Rudy has had an outstanding season, and the Jazz's defense has sucked when he's not out there. So they both have intriguing cases. I'm going to give it to the best defensive player on the best defensive team.
It's really close, dude. I ultimately agree with the rationale, and it's not just because it's the best defensive player on the best defensive team. It's because it's Draymond Green, and, you know, I think that he really does make a case for best defender on the planet, especially when it matters and when you're in a playoff situation and you need versatility and you need a guy who can go out there and check multiple players at a high level, and you can't just do the drop out of the pick and roll and whatnot and have this system that certain matchups and lineups can expose. Yes, it is a regular season award, and Rudy Gobert is tough to argue against as the best regular season defender in basketball. My thinking is just kind of, if we are ever going to give it to somebody else, it should probably be Draymond this year. I mean, holding opposing players 4.5% below their typical field goal percentage. Again, the versatility is unreal. The guy's 6'5", and he's one of the best rim protectors in basketball when he's challenged to be, holds people 8% below their average inside of 6 feet. And yeah, the Warriors have a lot of great defenders on this team, and the on-off differential on that side for Draymond is not going to compare. But still, the Warriors' defense with Draymond on the floor is better than the Jazz's with Gobert on the floor. So am I going to reward Gobert just because the Jazz have kind of no backup plan for if he isn't out there? And yeah, I mean, his impact is undeniable. And you funnel guys in there, he holds them 12% below their typical field goal percentage inside of 6 feet. You mentioned the defensive differential. They're 11 points per 100 better with him. And the Jazz are 1-4 without him. Like, all of those things as far as team impact probably lean Gobert. But I just think, with the value of Draymond as a mind defensively, with the versatility, with just the production that he has put forth, and then with the incredible success of the Warriors team defense, I would like to give it to him. And I don't think voter fatigue should be a factor. And I don't know if it is for me right now. I can't get into all of my subconscious biases. I'm trying to limit it as much as I can. I just think, you said it, like, the Warriors have been a better team defense, and I think Draymond is every bit the defender that Rudy Gobert is, and in some ways is certainly more valuable. So I'm going to go with Draymond. I think it's really a two-horse race. I didn't consider anybody else. So let's keep it moving here. Sixth man of the year, Logan, I think is really a one-man race, and I'd be interested if you made a case for anybody else, especially you. But who do you have as your sixth man of the year?
I'm giving it to Tyler Hero, man. I love this kid. I love him so much, man. 21 points a night, 4 assists, 5 boards on 43, 38, 87 splits. I made a video on Tyler Hero. Please check it out. Pretty sweet, if you ask me. I talked about his growth as a difficult shot maker in that video a lot, and it has been staggering this season. He's declined a little bit on pull-up jumpers from 44% last year to 39%, but in other departments, he has been utterly phenomenal, going from 34% on step-backs to 50% this year, 14% on fadeaways to 42% this year, on the lowest amount of assisted field goals in his entire career. Like, you can just ask Tyler, go out there and serve you a bucket, and he's going to. And I think we've seen his growth as a willing playmaker. Like, it's under a 1 assist-per-game increase from last season, but out of the pick and roll, getting underneath the basket and finding guys cutting, spotting guys in the corner, like, he's making cross-court reads. Tyler's made strides as a playmaker as well, and I think that's underrated. On top of that, the Heat have had a staggering amount of people out, and yet they are staying afloat. They are still one of the best teams in basketball, and Tyler deserves a lot of the credit for that, man. Like, Jimmy has missed time. Bam has missed time. A bunch of bench guys have missed time. And yet the Heat engine keeps rolling. The Heat continue to win basketball games. And Hero is by far, in my opinion, the best isolation scorer on this team. And I think you can make a case that he's the best, best pure bucket getter on this team. So I think, I don't really know anybody else I could give this award to. Maybe your guy Tyrese Maxey should definitely be up here. Halliburton should be up here. Kelly Oubre Jr., if you're feeling weird. Maybe. I don't know. I think this is Hero's award to lose at this point, and he's a lock. If we had to do bets, this is my lock of the year. Go put some money on this. He's clinched this award, in my opinion.
Well, I will point out that the Tyreses have started pretty much all year, so they're not eligible. And there really are no candidates on Hero's level here. Like, the raw production is unrivaled. And yeah, the efficiency isn't remarkable, but that's something that historically we have been able to overlooked when it comes to sixth man of the year. Like, a lot of times you just get the nastiest bucket, the best volume scorer. And last year I was an advocate for Joe Ingles as sixth man of the year because I thought he was the rare exception where so impactful in so many different ways, so efficient that, you know, he could break the mold. He was that good of a sixth man. Most of the time, though, you're not getting candidates like that. And this year, I think that, yeah, you throw Oubre into that conversation. I mean, it's just really kind of pointless, in my opinion, to discuss any of the other real candidates. I honestly might have Trez second. I just think, you know, his offensive contributions, his efficiency, really impressive. But we're not talking about anybody remotely on the level of a Tyler Hero. Honorable mention to like a Kevin Love, who's actually playing basketball, a Cam Johnson, just guys who are doing their jobs, sharpshooters on really good teams, but nobody's catching Hero. I think he's like a minus 400 betting favorite at this point, as he should be, because that race is over and done with. All right, another award for which I think Hero may have made a case at some points in the year, and was your pick preseason, if I'm not mistaken, for this one, most improved player. Logan, who do you have here?
Yeah, I picked her to win most improved, but not sixth man. It's on me. I think there's another no-brainer. It's got to be Ja Morant. 25, 7, and 6 on 49, 38 splits. You just have to look at the improved shooting, man. 32% on jumpers last season to 39%, 30% from deep last season to 38%, 28% on pull-ups to 38%, and the finishing inside. I mean, that was always his bread and butter. He's gotten significantly better at that. 57% inside 5 to 65% inside 3 feet from 63% last season to 71%. It's unconscious. 84.1% of Ja's shots are either coming from inside, I believe, 3 feet or behind the arc. Like, Ja just creates the two most efficient shots at basketball at one of the highest volumes in all of the NBA, and is shooting them both at an insanely efficient clip. Like, maybe you could look at other guys and just look at where they were and how much they've improved, and I guess that's the case. Miles Bridges, your guy, DeJounte Murray. I don't know, though. Like, Ja at this point is damn near unguardable. He has no holes in his game. This is a guy who, you know, just last year, earlier in the season, you were saying, maybe you just let Ja shoot. Ja doesn't have any holes in his game. Go ahead, give him that three-pointer. He's going to wet it in your mouth, too. Ja has zero holes in his game now. And, hey, man, I just said maybe it could be an MVP conversation. I think it is a no-brainer MIP. Ja has gone from, where do you say, what star last season? Is that, I don't think that's exaggerating.
In the regular season, I don't think he played at a star level last year. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, his shooting regressed from the previous year. His raw production was very similar. Playoffs, it was obvious that it's like, okay, a fully aggressive Ja playing at his best. This guy's relentlessness getting in the bucket is just unbelievable. But I would say this is the first year he's been a legitimate bona fide star.
Yes, I mean, he's taken that. So we'll go very, very good last season. He's made that superstar jump. And again, if you look at the precedent here, it's guys who make that superstar jump. I don't think there's anybody else in the league that you could say has made the superstar leap this year. So, no-brainer. It's Ja Morant.
Completely agreed. And I had some hesitance early in the year about crowning Ja for this award just because, well, first of all, Miles Bridges was playing out of his mind and the efficiency was better than it is at this point. And I thought he was a guy who had demonstrated so much skill development that I kind of wanted to reward that. Like, just his versatility as a scorer, I thought was so impressive. But when it comes to Ja, I mean, when he's taken the raw production leap and the efficiency leap and the pure shooting leap, and when you have this level of team success too, I just think kind of undeniable. And that outside shot really is the element of the skill development. Because early in the year, I was looking at this and I was saying, okay, how much of what Ja is doing right now could he not have done the year before? And maybe that's a flawed way to look at it, but that's what you have to balance with most improved player. It's like, how much of it is opportunity versus actual skill development? How do you weigh those against each other? And there's no clear answer that we have for that. But I think that what has been definitive is that when he is shooting 38% from three, he's a different player. And if that is sustained over a year, He's a different player. And the floater has been impressive. We saw that in the playoffs last year at a really high volume and in the regular season, but that was when it really popped in the playoffs. That's been sustained. The finishing, you mentioned it all. And some of the negatives about this season, defensively, at one point, he had just been brutal and was really hurting the Grizzlies overall, and that's why like his on-off splits were so terrible, and he's gotten his head out of his rear there, as you expect, and is now, I would say, playing perfectly respectable on defense again. So I think it's got to be Ja. I would have Darius Garland as my second guy, who I believe was my preseason pick and was also on my ballot last year. God, have I loved Darius Garland, and God, have I been right. You guys should listen to Nerd Sesh, because when I really get worked up about somebody and I love somebody, I tend to be right. Garland is not going to have the requisite leap in production. Like, he's just not close. You know, he's up a couple points a game and is up like an assist and a half a game. But he's doing everything better. He's finishing better. He's shooting 52% from mid-range. He's shooting 52% on floaters. Like, he has just found a level of efficiency that is really appropriate given his skill. Because the handle, the shot, the touch, the playmaking feel, it's always been really, really, really undeniably impressive from Darius Garland. But, you know, sometimes he struggled to consistently get to the bucket, to finish when he got there, to just find that efficient scoring inside the arc, to attempt enough threes given, you know, his proficiency as a shooter. And now he's doing all those things and is just really crushing it all around for a really good team. And then I would have Bridges, because still, you know, he scored under 13 a game last year and came on really strong at the end of the year. But now he's putting up almost 20 a game on 57% true shooting. He's up 8 points a game, and I do think if he shoots at the level you expect, because he's sub 32% from deep right now on the year, and that just doesn't feel right to me, given what we saw from him last season, then I think, you know, he could re-enter the conversation in a more legitimate way. I don't think he's beating Ja, but I do think that would do him a solid and would probably put him back up to second for me. Is there anybody else here who you feel like deserves a mention?
No.
I think people would throw out Jordan Poole, maybe. I don't think he really has any case to win. And he's another guy who, again, towards the end of last year, you saw, oh, wow, this guy's playing at a really high level. But it's been more consistent this year. Still, though, you know, the efficiency isn't always great, but I love Jordan Poole.
There is one more guy, actually, that I think maybe we should consider. And funnily enough, Carson says, you know, when he gets worked up about a guy, you should listen. Dude, Carson would break into my room while I was sleeping, and he would go, Logan, you've got to watch this Ant Simons guy. He's unreal. Maybe Ant. And I don't mean as in genuine consideration. Again, I think Ja has this locked up. Anthony Simons has been unreal as of late. Like, and the leap he has taken this year is legit. Again, dude, Carson would never stop talking about this guy for a year. He would just, Ant Simons, Ant Simons, Ant Simons. I couldn't. I'd be like, you know, what about Damian Lillard? What about CJ McCollum? No, he just wanted to talk about Ant Simons all the time. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, in his dreams, in his sleep. Ant Simons. Ant Simons has finally taken the leap that Carson has anticipated for so long. He has been a big supporter of this guy. And it's nice to finally see it come to fruition, man. He has been an amazing for them. With everything that has gone wrong in Portland, something is going right, and that's Ant Simons is freaking balling.
Yeah, he won't have a case just because, you know, you take the leap from 9 a game to 14 a game, but in the month of January, he is putting up 28-8 on 51-45-95 splits. And I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I have been as big of an Ant Simons guy as anybody out there since he was a prospect in the draft. So this is beautiful, Logan, because we are now at the stage of my career as an NBA analyst where a lot of the young guys who, you know, I said I loved are finally developed enough as actual players to where they are really good. Because the first 2 years, you know, there's only so many guys who are going to get there. I actually have an award for myself on this topic that I'll get to later. But a lot of the Carson Brebber favorites have been hitting this year, all right?
I was going to say, this is a nice time, because in every year I can look back and I can go, wow, man, that Jalen Suggs dude sucks. No, great job, though, dude. This dude's been spot on. You guys should listen to Nerd Sesh.
I miss, though. Sometimes I miss.
Name one.
I was a huge Chandler Hutchison guy. I was really young, but that was the same class as Ant Simons, so, you know, I can only take so much credit for one without taking flack for the other. For a while, actually, you and I were both kind of on this train. We thought that Denny was like the best player in that draft. Denny has come along, though, too.
Can I ask, what made you like Chandler Hutchison so much?
He was just a do-it-all guy. I mean, two-way player, versatile offensively, could put the ball on the floor, could shoot it, high IQ player, real bring-your-lunch-pail-to-work kind of guy. Al, here's a guy, Chandler Hutchison, who just wants to go to work. Boise State. All right, that's enough of that. Coach of the Year, Logan. I think another really, really interesting race. Who do you have?
I got like six guys written down for this, man. I got Steve Kerr here, J.B. Bickerstaff, Monty Williams, Taylor Jenkins, and Billy Donovan all written down as potential candidates. I'm going to give it to Coach Spo. Again, man, I talk about the circumstances that the Heat have had to deal with all of these injuries, and I just think it's outstanding that they're still in the, you know, in contention out East and are still really competitive night in, night out. Third in the East, they're 26-15. This is with Jimmy Butler missing 18 games. This is with Bam Adebayo missing 23. This is with Morris missing 31 games. This is with Victor Oladipo having yet to play in a game this year, yet the Heat are still at the top of the East. I think the next most compelling case is probably Billy Donovan or Taylor Jenkins, just because, again, when you talk about coaching awards, it's about expectation. Who the hell would have thought the Bulls would have been at the top of the East? Maybe me. Maybe a guy like Logan Camden would have thought the Bulls were going to win the East, but not many other people. The Bulls have been phenomenal. Billy has always been a great coach, dating back to his Florida days. And the defense is amazing. That is where I think Billy deserves his most credit. The guy's a defensive mastermind. And the Bulls are the best team out East. And I think he has a really good case. I think Taylor Jenkins does as well. You know, out West, who the hell would have thought the Grizzlies would be the three seed? That's amazing, too. And then I think J.B. Bickerstaff. Like, you can throw Monty and Steve out there, but we expected the Suns and Warriors to be great again. I didn't expect the Cavs to make the playoffs. So, my top four, Spo, Billy Donovan, Taylor Jenkins, and then JB. But it's a really deep race, man. This is the deepest Coach of the Year race I can remember in a minute.
Yeah, it's a really strong one. I've got Taylor Jenkins right now, and I think Taylor Jenkins has worked his way at least into my Coach of the Year conversation in all three seasons that he has been coaching in the NBA. Like, the guy is just unbelievable, and his Grizzlies teams have very consistently overachieved and have found their identity and have been able to succeed with a really impressive level of depth and defensive intensity and playing with pace. And I mean, this year, really, it's been the offensive evolution that's taken them up another level, because they're ninth in defensive rating. That's great. And they're still playing at a pretty fast pace, not as fast as they have the last couple years, but they're the number four offense in basketball. And I just think the Grizzlies are 29-14 right now. I don't know if there is a more meaningful level of overachievement, because, I mean, obviously what the Cavs have done is super impressive, 24-18, but like, the Grizzlies have a better record than the Utah Jazz right now, man. They are the three seed in the Western Conference. That's just unbelievable. They were 11-2 without Ja Morant. So I just think you look at the depth, the synergy, the two-way identity, the ability to win with multiple lineups and with different players stepping up at different times. You got to give a ton of credit to Taylor Jenkins, and I think he's consistently been one of the best and most underrated NBA coaches, and it's unbelievably impressive to me. I would say the rest of my top five in order, I'd probably go Steve Kerr too, and yeah, everybody's going to benefit a lot from having a little bit of Steph Curry in their life, and you can't deny that, but I just think they're 30-10 having had Klay Thompson for two games, and they really put together an awesome roster. And do I think his execution as a coach is always perfect? Maybe not. Maybe this is more of just a cumulative look at what the Warriors have done award. But they have given minutes to some guys who have really been impactful, like obviously Garrett Payton stepping in. And the depth has just been really, really strong for them, stronger than I expected. So I give him credit for that and the team success. Billy Donovan, I would have third. I just think for this team to be the one seed in the East, look, I was a believer. You were a believer. I had them winning 50 games before the year and had them as my four seed, I think, or my five seed. But still, they have surpassed that. And to get a group of guys who historically haven't always won at the highest level, it's been really remarkably impressive. Getting them committed to playing defense at the level they have, even though it's regressed a bit, still a good defensive team. Got to give them a ton of credit. J.B. Bickerstaff, I think them being 24-18, just given the preseason expectations, what they looked like last year, the injuries that they've had to deal with, really, really impressive. And then I think I got to have Monty Williams just because, you know, you got to give credit to the continued success there, the strength of the team all around. I would not have Spo, though. I think he would be my next guy. So that's interesting. I mean, the injury case is a legitimate one, just what they've had to overcome, and maybe I should have put a little bit more weight in that. I don't think anybody is surpassing Taylor Jenkins for me at this point just because of the level of overachievement, and again, doing it even dealing with injuries to Ja Morant, 11-2 without him is unthinkable. Spo is always great. He always belongs, at least in the outskirts of this conversation, but interesting. So a little bit more disagreement there. Any thoughts on my list? Anybody else you think is worthy of a shout-out?
I just wonder if I should have put a little more stock in the Ja being absent case, because it really is significant, man. In terms of just getting guys to step up, man, and like you said, dude, Jenkins has definitively been in this case, been in this conversation for, 3 years now. I don't think there's anybody else. I think this is kind of concrete, but yeah, I'm still rocking with Spo, dude. I think it's been outstanding what they've been able to do with all of these injuries. Again, without your best offensive player, without your best defensive player, it's been impressive. Max Strus for the win. That dude's the GOAT.
Yeah, you're right. I think I should have Spo higher in my rankings. It's quite the accomplishment, but I still don't think he would be number one for me. All right, so we have now made it through the actual awards. We're going to give a couple of Nerd Sesh specials here, though. So we each have two custom awards. Logan, I will give it over to you first. Who are you giving a shout-out here at the midseason point?
My first award is the most underrated award, and I'm giving this to an individual player, and it's Jared Allen. Like, I think Jared Allen is the Cavs' best player. Darius Garland is excellent. Evan Mobley is also excellent. I think Jared Allen has been the biggest reason why the Cavs have been able to sustain this level of play. He's putting up 17-11-2 on 70% from the field. It's unreal efficiency. He's an outstanding shot blocker. He's the reason this defense has been so dominant all year long. And I think we debated, this is a little bit of a tangent here, Carson, we debated if we thought Mobley should play the five long term. This might be the future of basketball, man, defensively. Like, maybe I shouldn't say that, because finding a guy like Mobley who can play the four and not suffer that much, it's hard to find. But two guys that can get vertical, like, dude, I don't know if I've ever seen a help shot blocker as great as Mobley. And, like, you have two guys who are just elite at sending shots back on the floor for the majority of the game. It's amazing, man. But I just don't feel like people are talking about Jared Allen enough, man. I feel like he was underrated. I mean, hell, we shat all over that contract. 5 years, 100 mil? It's not looking that bad now, man. Like, it's looking like a really smart investment for Cleveland. And I really think Jared Allen has a really strong all-star case, man, like, with what he is doing and how great the Cavaliers have been. I just think he's underrated, man. Enough people are not talking about him. A lot of people still think it's a bad contract. I think Jared has surpassed all my expectations for him, and then some. And again, doing it this efficiently, 70% from the field, this is a guy that the Nets dealt away because he was biting into DJ's minutes, man. And now he's one of the best centers out east. So shout out Jared Allen, man. I think the guy's been flying under the radar for a little far too long. And yeah, I'm going to shout him out, man. He has been elite this season.
I'd like to issue a formal statement here, because I really, believe it or not, have always liked Jared Allen a lot since he came into the league. And then that contract happened, and I was very critical of it, in large part because I thought Evan Mobley is a center long term. That is where you're going to get the most out of him. You don't pay a guy alongside him who has to be your center 5 years, $100 million. If he's not an exceptional, undeniable star-level player. And I drew the comparison to Jared Allen doing replacement-level things at a high level, but, you know, you can find a guy who gives you 60% or 70% of that for $5 million a year, and that should sort of be the strategy. I think he's clearly surpassed that level. I mean, he is at the point where you're looking at one of the most efficient offensive big men in basketball, putting up 17 a game on 70% from the field. High-level role man, dynamic athlete, really good on the glass, and just a sensational defensive player, like an all-defense level guy. And I think he's holding people 16% below their average field goal percentage inside of 6 feet and has been the best defender on a top three defense in basketball. I mean, Mobley's been really good too, but I think Allen is the most impactful probably just given his rim protection. The guy is really great. And I don't want to speak negatively about the contract. You know, I still do have mixed feelings about it, as crazy as that may sound to some, just because I do think Evan Mobley is a center. I think his pure rim protection this year has already shown that. And I think once he adds strength, it's going to become more and more evident. And I do think offensively, especially, you will get more out of Evan Mobley if you have more floor spacing alongside him. Like, I still feel all these things. I don't want to be overly reactionary to the moment, but this also is not the moment to criticize Jared Allen because he's been unbelievable. He's been better than I expected. Paying him $20 million, you know, not looking at the long-term ramifications per year, good value. If I would say go pay a guy like Clint Capella, I mean, Jared Allen is playing significantly better than Clint Capella, obviously this year, but I would say last year even as well. He's been more efficient offensively and has been as impactful defensively. So I got to give him a ton of credit. And he's actually part of a collective award for me. Do you want to say more about Jared Allen?
I just want to ask, I agree. I agree with you on the point about Mobley that you're maximizing him at the five. Do you think they can coexist long-term? Because I think this works. Like, the third in defensive rating right now, just having two rim protectors like that on the floor at all times is invaluable. Like, I get that you're maximizing Mobley by running him at the five, but the help side factor is crazy to me. Like, having two shot blockers of that caliber on the floor, I think is invaluable.
I mean, it's just going to end up being a cost-benefit analysis, right? Because when these guys play together, the Cavs are an unbelievable defense. They have a defensive rating of 100, as Logan battles with a sneeze there. But offensively, I mean, you are suffering to a certain extent. I think their offensive rating has been 106.6, which is not great. Like, you know, that puts you as the equivalent of the number 26 offense in basketball. So is that ultimately the offensive ceiling that you can achieve with Evan Mobley at center? I definitely don't think that it's comparable. I think that, like, you give that guy that kind of spacing, you put that kind of shooting around him with his versatility offensively, his playmaking, his athleticism, his skill, just watch him go to work and it would be quite scary. I understand that maybe that's controversial right now because what the Cavs are doing is working and it's far surpassed expectations, so I'm not going to sit here and be super critical of it. I do think Evan Mobley is a center in this league, though, but he's so damn good that he can play both, and Jared Allen is also so damn good that it makes sense for them right now, and they should certainly appreciate what they have this season because it's been great. As I was saying, though, this is part of a collective award, and it is the Prove 'Em Wrong Award. And it's a few guys who I just think have really rewritten the narrative about themselves this year and have impressed. Jared Allen was specifically about me because of what I said about the contract. I guess I did say that I still believe some of what I said, but regardless, you know, good for him. He's been playing really, really, really good basketball. Like, Jared Allen is in the All-Star conversation. You wouldn't have expected that before the year. I wouldn't have, certainly. I think DeMar DeRozan is the obvious choice here, and another guy who historically I had been critical of, but I was very excited to see in Chicago, and I'm glad I was on the right side of that. And I mean, him putting up 26-5-5 on 58% true shooting with plus 13 on off splits for the top seed in the East when he's 32 years old now, right? It's incredible. It's the peak of his career up to this point, in my opinion. I understand that 2017-18 Raptors were the one seed, and he was in the MVP conversation. I think he's gotten better since then. I think that what we are seeing right now is an unbelievably high level of play from him offensively, and just all the Bulls, dude. I mean, I will remind people, their preseason win total over-under that I saw was 42.5 or 41.5. I mean, people were talking about them as a potential play-in team, and I don't think Bulls fans need a reminder of that. I think they've got plenty of chips on the old shoulder, and like, Chicago Bulls, NBC, SN, they tweet plenty of stuff about people being wrong. I'm just glad to say that I was mostly right, and even I still slightly underestimated, I think, how good this team was going to end up being. And DeRozan's a huge part of that. And the last guy I have here, is Kyle Kuzma. You know, I just got to shout out Kuz, man. I mean, is it always beautiful basketball? Is it always super efficient basketball? Is the shot always phenomenal? No. It's a bit of a negative start to giving praise to a guy. But he's putting up 16-9-3. He's playing plus defense. He's been a really important member of a Wizards team that has still overachieved, even though they obviously regressed from their hot start. And I just think you got to give credit, dude, because that's a guy who I think always there was so much of the, well, he wouldn't be anything if he wasn't in LA. And I think he did get dramatically overrated at times because he was a Laker. But now he's playing the best basketball of his career unequivocally, not in LA, and a little bit under the radar there. And I think that he has proven his value as a basketball player independent of that Lakers brand. And I think you got to give him credit for that. And I'm sure there are other guys who I could shout out here, but those are the three who came to the forefront of my mind.
Dude, Kuzma has been awesome in the clutch for the Wizards thus far too, dude. Like, helping close games out, hitting big shots. Like, no, Kuzma has proved everybody wrong. I didn't hate the trade. I was glad they were getting some value back, but nah, I thought Kuzma was an inefficient, like, 12 to 14 point per game scorer. I mean, he's doing it efficiently, like you said, playing plus defense. And again, in the clutch, he's had some really great performances. My last award is, I believe, one that I've given out this similar name before, the Yosemite Sam Award. Some of you would say, Logan, what are you talking about? You're nonsensically babbling over here. You're an absolute buffoon. To that, I would say, that's just disrespectful. Why would you say that to me?
Yeah, that is pretty hurtful, guys. So just maybe take it easy on him.
So my dad will kick your dad's ass, okay? I'll get Jimmy on you. Don't ever talk to me that way again. No, but Yosemite Sam, dynamite. Time to blow things up. I love blowing things up. Not literally. I would never do that.
Yeah, we're editing that out.
Two teams definitely need to blow things up at this point in the season, and it's, well, my Sacramento Kings and the Portland Trailblazers. I think it's just time, man. I think it's past time. The West is deep. The West is really good. Do I really want to see the Kings make a 10-seed push? Who cares? Maybe a little bit. It'd be nice to, like, get a consolation playoff berth. We need to, both of these teams need to blow things up immediately. I think the Blazers, honestly, move McCollum, move Lillard, restart, hit the reset button completely. Like, you're not winning anything anytime soon. This bench has been horrid. Dame has struggled with injuries, and something that I think a lot of people have touched on, Carson, I really wonder if these injuries are going to linger and stick with Dame long-term. It does concern me. So, before we can see the result of that, maybe move off of him for peak value because Dame is still a star. And I'm not saying that he's going to have this precipitous drop-off, this dramatic exponential drop-off, but I do wonder if they're going to hamper him in availability-wise as his career continues. Both of them can also get you extreme value. You can find some, people will give you a ton of picks for both of these guys. So go ahead and cash in and go full Oklahoma City Thunder mode and do it. As for the Kings, it's a little more complicated. Because again, there's still a lot of assets I like. I like Foxy. I like Halliburton. I like Mitchell. The one thing I don't want you to do, Sacramento, because Carson, I've heard this a lot, and the rumor is that Ben Simmons is the guy for Sacramento, and that is the team that is going to pull the trigger on it, and that somehow we're the only landing destination. I don't want Ben Simmons, but I want to blow things up. If it's moving off of Fox, so be it. Like, I don't see us winning anything meaningful anytime soon with Fox on our roster. And Halliburton has done a phenomenal job of running this offense, of producing isolation buckets, of creating shots for other people with Fox not out there. Again, I love Fox. He's specially talented. But at some point, you have to get value for the future because you're not good right now. That's what bad teams do. You take the assets that you currently have, and you get stuff for the future. And that's what we have to do. You're a middling team. If you don't do anything, you're just going to stagnate, and we are going to be in the exact same spot we were in last year, the year previous. We're going to be in there next year. So I think the Blazers rebuild is a lot easier because you have a guys with a lot more value. Sacramento's a lot harder. Either way, go get that guy with the big red bushy mustache, light the dynamite sticks up, and throw him into the franchises and blow everything up because it's past time. The West is as deep as it's ever been. The West is deep, and you're not winning anytime soon. So go ahead and blow things up and go full Thunder mode.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that clearly both teams need a dramatic change in direction. The Blazers are postponing the inevitable. They're going nowhere. And the Kings, I mean, listen, they're not going full Thunder mode, right? Because they have...
You don't have enough assets.
Sure. And also, I mean, I think that there's more guys who you look at as actual foundational pieces. I mean, if you are going to move off of Fox, that's one thing. But I guess, obviously, the Thunder have had SGA throughout it all. But outside of him... Nobody, you know, I mean, Lou Dort has grown into like that second guy for them, I guess, and he's a deeply flawed basketball player. But I agree, both these teams are to a certain extent going to have to blow things up, dramatically reconfigure. I don't know how it looks for the Kings. I mean, I have said previously, I just don't think now is the time to go do anything with De'Aaron Fox because his value is just not what you would normally expect it to be. What?
I just want to, could you get 3 first round picks for Fox right now?
I don't think so, no.
You get 2.
I don't know, man. Like, I think it's really difficult to overstate how brutal of a year this has been for a guy who averaged 25-7 on solid efficiency last year as a 23-year-old. Like, the shooting has been so brutal. The raw production has dropped off. The playmaking, like, we've talked about it previously, but I just don't know. So... I'm still a believer to an extent in his talents, but this year has just been a lot of the ugly stuff from De'Aaron Fox, and I don't know who's looking at him elsewhere as a foundational piece. So I don't think there's anything for the Kings to do right now. I really don't. I think that you play this year out, you see how things go, and the Blazers, I don't think, are really in a position to do anything either because I just don't know what it is. I mean, it's going to be a Dame trade at some point, I guess, and I don't know when that's happening. We'll see, because clearly they don't want to do it. So bring out the dynamite, says Logan Camden, and I think that to an extent, at least, you're right. Those are a couple of messed up spots. But, you know, the Kings have some things going for them. The Blazers have Ant Simons. Let's be positive, okay? Because right now, I am giving myself and a handful of my favorite players the Carson Brebber's Guys Award, all right? We've already talked about it throughout this episode, but the 2021-22 season has brought me so much joy. I have watched Darius Garland, who I have been raving about for as long as I've had a platform and he was a name out in the ether, is playing at an all-level. Evan Mobley, who I said was the best prospect I had ever seen, is going to win Rookie of the Year. Tyrese Maxey, who I said was the best scoring prospect in last year's draft, is putting up like 17 a game on solid efficiency and has been so impressive and important for the Sixers. Anthony Simons, as we mentioned, is averaging 28-8 this month and has just had a really good season after he was one of my 3 favorite players in his draft class, and I've talked about him a ton. And most importantly, Logan, most importantly, Malik Monk is averaging 21 points per game this month on 45% from deep. And everybody wants to let their Malik Monk takes fly. And I've been sitting here in silence as the Lakers media machine goes crazy. Oh my God, Malik Monk is the Lakers' second best player. This guy's unbelievable. LeBron looking at what Malik Monk was doing in Charlotte, how they were using him. Ha ha ha. Some of us have always known. Some of us has always believed in Malik. Malik Monk was my Twitter banner for a significant amount of time. And I'm not talking about Lakers Malik Monk. I'm talking about 2019-20 season before the pandemic. I believe Malik Monk was represented on my Twitter page as my header or banner or whatever the term is. I'm not done yet, Logan. I'm still very excited and juiced up. Malik Ahmad Monk has always been special. And I'm glad that the world is finally starting to see that. But don't pretend like you were on that train, bro. Because if there's one dude I'm going to be defensive of, first, it's probably Christian Wood. Maybe Jamal Murray's up there. All right, these are some longtime favorites. But Malik Monk has always been my guy, and people are seeing it now. So give me credit. I want credit.
This dude is gatekeeping basketball. Get a load of this freaking guy. I was going to blow you up even more. I was just going to say, previous to that and after that, Detroit Pistons' Christian Wood was this dude's banner. So, yeah, give him the Jordan shrug, Carson. You're gatekeeping Malik Monk, though. You dick.
I also gave myself an award on our NBA midseason award show. So, some questionable plays for me, maybe, but it's really more about the enthusiasm that it brings me and the joy it brings me. And yeah, Cam Reddish, you know, as your father points out in the chat, is having a good year. Another guy who I've been far too obsessed with throughout my career. But those five, it's just been like best case scenario for this year, pretty much. And I've been very, very happy to see it all unfold. So thank God that I gave myself that award. Logan, any other final thoughts as we wrap up here?
I'm just going to shout out Jalen Brunson because that's my guy. He's been balling this year. I'll give myself the Jalen Brunson award because that dude's that does make me mad, Carson. Everybody wants to hop on the Jalen Brunson train now. It's been my guy. Listen to Nerd Sesh. We gatekeep basketball.
No, we don't want to gatekeep basketball, okay? But if I get one guy to stake my claim on, again, it's probably not actually Malik Monk, but he's one of the top 3 to 5, okay? So just at me, just at Carsobi, you brilliant, brilliant man. You were so right. Russell Westbrook has been so bad all along. You made that website. You did a class project on it. You made all those videos. You told us before this year, and you told us in 2017. Since I started making content, I've been anti-Russell Westbrook. Easiest take of my life. All right, this is getting out of control. I'm just praising myself excessively. I also mess up a lot, okay? I thought the Lakers were going to go to the conference finals this year. I guess most people were even more wrong than me on that one. But so, you had them winning the title, huh, Logan?
I got someplace to be.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a pleasure, as always. Woo! It is good to be back talking basketball, and we will be back with plenty more soon. Tomorrow is going to be a great Nerd Sesh day. Logan is going to get punished for losing our NFL Game Picks competition. He's going to watch 7 Noah Centineo movies. That's Netflix heartthrob Noah Centineo in one day and react to them all on a TikTok. And we will shoot a podcast previewing the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. So stay tuned for all of that. You probably know where to find us. YouTube, if you're here, welcome. Glad to have you. We obviously do our podcast here live streamed. We also come out with some video essay content, video breakdown stuff that we should be getting back started up soon. Took a little break from that over the holidays. You can follow us on social media. Twitter is at @nerd_sesh. Instagram and TikTok are both at @nerdsesh. And you can listen to the podcast on whatever platform you choose, Spotify, Apple, etc. So with that, as always, I have been Carson Brabber.
I have been Noah Centineo's biggest fan.
And this was Nerd Sesh.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.